This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 180. Today, CJ and I are going to catch up on a lot of Microsoft Azure, Microsoft Office, quarterly results, Oracle, KubeCon, man, you name it. We got a lot of news. Recorded live February the 7th, 2017.
The Microsoft Cloud Show is sponsored by ShareGate. ShareGate makes it easier for organizations to adopt and use the latest Microsoft productivity tools, helping millions of users be happier and more productive at work. ShareGate is trusted by over 10,000 IT admins from over 110 countries to manage, migrate, and secure their SharePoint and Office 365 environments. ShareGate is recognized as the must-have tool for day-to-day administration of on-premises, cloud, and hybrid environments. Interested in learning more? Check them out on ShareGate.com to learn how ShareGate can make you more productive.
Good morning, CJ.
Good morning. Sorry, I couldn't help giggling during your intro because seriously, dude, we've got a lot of catching up to do on the news.
We really do. We've done a bunch of interviews lately and a bunch of other feature shows, but yeah, it's time to kind of catch up on the news. We got a boatload of stuff here, some updates that came from Azure, from Office. We got some, all the big guys released their quarterly earning numbers, so we got to talk about some of that stuff. And man, we got a bunch of stuff. But hey, before we get started here, I know this episode's coming out on Valentine's Day. So I love you, man.
Yeah, thanks, buddy. Me too.
But
man hug.
Yeah, man hug. There you go. So what have you been up to this last few days?
I took a little sort of mini vacation long weekend in Whistler and did some skiing with some friends, which was lovely. We got absolutely dumped on, like 2 feet of fresh pow, and I've never been more exhausted in my life.
Oh, very nice.
It was pretty cool. We did a lot of skiing and there was some post-skiing drinking and eating to be done. So it was fun. We had a great time and it was a nice little getaway.
Awesome.
Yeah. How about you? What have you been up to?
Well, in the last week, I can't remember if I mentioned this last week or not, but I launched with Voitanos, my new online training business, I launched an email course, a 10-day email course on understanding the SharePoint framework development tool chain. So in the research I've done for the course and in talking to a couple hundred people from different surveys that I've put out there, my hypothesis has always been, or has been, that the majority of the problem that people are having with the SharePoint framework is that they simply don't understand this new SharePoint framework, dev tool chain, the whole Node, Webpack, Gulp, all that stuff. And that's the thing that's really tripping people up. It's not so much the actual SharePoint framework, but it's the dev tool chain. So in the next few weeks, I'll be publishing a free version of the first few chapters of my course as a bundle. But then I also put this 10-day email course out. Frankly, I have been floored at the responsiveness. Like the email, the company I use for email subscriptions and managing my email list, my subscription level has been bumped up twice in the last week, which is great. It's bad for expenses, but it's great because people are loving it. So, I mean, I'm seeing, like, as somebody who's done like email marketing, you probably are familiar with this, but I'm getting conversions of around like over 20%. I'm seeing over 60% of the emails open and over 40% are clicking on links from it. And only 2 people have unsubscribed. So I'm like, it is like a 0.5% unsubscription rate, which is...
That's unheard of.
Oh, I'm thrilled. I'm absolutely thrilled with it. So
that's cool.
People are loving it. So I'm enjoying it. If you're interested in checking it out, I'll make sure that I have a link to it in the show notes where you can sign up if you're listening to the show. Again, it's free. Just a new email delivered to your inbox every day on a different piece over the course of 10 days of the dev tool chain.
Very cool. That's really exciting. Congrats.
Thanks.
So, very nice.
Hey, today we've got a ridiculous amount of news, like we said, that we want to get through. Well, frankly, we want to get through it kind of quick because we both have hard stops. But second of all, because we have a lot of stuff we want to share. So I'm going to run through just 2 or 3 updates real quick just to let people know what's going on in the Azure space and also a little bit in the cloud space. And then we can just kind of go from there. So
yeah, we got some news to do.
Exactly. So the first one I'm going to do real quick is from the Cloud Native Computing Foundation. And coming up in March in Berlin, they have a conference called Cloud Native Con and KubeCon Europe that's going on. And we'll have a link to where you can get to this, but this is following up on their sold-out show that they had in Seattle. And it's mainly targeted to people who use Kubernetes and other some of the other open source projects. They've got a bunch of really good speakers that they've already lined up for this. So one of the co-chairs of this conference is Kelsey Hightower. We had him on the show talking about Kubernetes a while back. Mm-hmm. But here's some of the things that some of the content that they've already announced for it. For those of you who are in Europe and you're looking for information on Kubernetes or the Cloud Native Computing Foundation. So there's a session by Alex Richardson, a CEO of Weave Networks called Cloud Native. There's a session by Mark Van Straten, which is a software engineer at Q42. This is a cool one. Your Philips Hue light bulbs are turned on by Kubernetes. Sounds interesting.
Wow, what a title.
A little bit of automation there. Kubernetes 1.6 and the open source roadmap. That's coming from a senior product manager at Google. Building the infrastructure that powers the future of AI. That's coming from a staff member, a member of staff at the OpenAI project that we talked about with, that's over on the, I think that's the one that, Elon Musk is in. Is that right?
Yeah, OpenAI. Yep.
OpenAI, yeah.
Yep.
Scaling Kubernetes, growing our user base by 10%. And then backstage with Kubernetes from an engineering director at Google. So a lot of really good content they've announced so far. People can go take a look at. That's going to be March 29th and 30th in Berlin. And they record a bunch of the content and put it up as well for those of you who can't attend and ask questions. So looks like it's going to be yet another sold-out show for those guys.
Interesting.
Cloud Native Computing Foundation.
Yeah, it's certainly picking up steam.
Yep.
Very nice.
So our next bit of news here is going to be in the Azure and resource side. I'll blaze through these guys kind of quick and bring you back into the show in just a moment.
Yeah, there's a few of them.
Yeah, exactly. So these are, I'm going to give you a couple of links. These are from some of the email lists that Microsoft pushes out if you subscribe to their email list for Azure updates. So first is a change with the, or an update with the Azure Document DB. Their .NET SDK is now fully Xamarin compatible. So if you're in the Xamarin stack, it's now fully compatible.
Very nice. Very nice.
Document DB. They have, and then we have a bunch of name changes and name and description changes. So two of them around the cognitive services stuff. So they have some face name, so face API name changes, really minor stuff, but there's some name changes there. And around the speech API, they had used to have two different SKUs, one for short form speech and long form speech. And they got rid of the long form speech SKU and they've renamed short form speech to speech to text. Makes a little more sense.
Yeah, gotcha. That, wow, that is actually a naming change that makes sense. Good job.
Yeah. Oh, God. Is that a shot at me? My
no,
beef
no.
About Microsoft changing names and everything.
No, not necessarily at you, just at Microsoft being pretty lame with naming sometimes.
Oh, sometimes.
Yeah.
They also have some additional name changes and unit changes. And this is nice because of a project that I was involved in the last few months. This is a little frustrating. So this is going to be around SQL databases, virtual machines, and storage, and networking. They've changed networking to now they just call it bandwidth.
Hmm.
A little more
makes sense. Yep.
At least it's a lot more friendly to developers like you and me.
Yeah, for sure.
But the other ones were they used to have it listed out like in the units. It was things like gigabytes and days and hours. But then you'd kind of see like days, and it's like, well, how does that work? Well, now they change it. So now the measures are 1 gigabyte, 1 day, and 1 hour.
Gotcha.
And pretty descriptive there.
Some basic simplifications.
Exactly, yeah. So that's my Azure news that I had here. I know that you got a little bit of Office-related news that you wanted to share too.
Yeah, sure. So a new Office Developer Digest mail came out, which is the first time in quite some time, which had a couple of announcements in it. One around Microsoft Teams developer preview. So this is for folks that want to get involved with extending Microsoft Teams, you know, the new app from Microsoft, I suppose you want to call it, in Office 365, and the ability to develop on some of that. And in fact, sort of an ancillary thing to this is Richard DeRozega, good friend of ours over at the Office 365 Developer Podcast, put out a new blog post on Teams extensibility that we'll link to in the show notes as well, because it kind of goes hand in hand with this. But it's really interesting. It talks about the different extensibility options in Teams around bots, tabs, and connectors in Teams, which was really interesting. And Microsoft are going to be pushing Teams really hard over the next 24 months or so. And so for developers out there, it might not be on your radar now, but I suspect if you're an Office 365 customer, you're going to want to start looking at this. So Teams is extensible is the short answer. Add-in commands for Mac OS, Word, Excel, and PowerPoint in Dev Preview. So what this means is add-in commands are when you go and extend those Office applications, the ability for your add-in to add command buttons in the ribbon and things like that. And that's what add-in commands are. And so they're adding those for those Mac OS apps. And then finally, SharePoint webhooks are made generally available. So this means you can start using them in production and count on them if you dare. And well, that's webhooks in general, isn't it? No, no slam on SharePoint in that regard. Okay, a little
bit. No.
But yeah, so those are in GA now. So basically, in a nutshell, you can subscribe for particular events from SharePoint and then be notified when certain things happen. This one is a little disappointing to me that it wasn't in the Microsoft Graph, but as I understand it, they are working on adding it into the Graph, along with all the other webhook support in the Graph that we've got today. So that will be a welcome addition once it makes it to the Graph from my point of view. But for now, if you're building SharePoint extensibility or building apps in SharePoint and things, then you can take advantage of webhooks to be notified when things happen in SharePoint Online.
Hmm, yeah. Very nice.
A couple of nice little updates. I hope they continue. This is near and dear to my heart. When I was at Microsoft last, we started the developer program, we started the dev digests, we started all of those things, and then it all sort of petered off. But nice to see it all come back.
Yeah, I feel for you and some of the guys that were on your team, guys and girls that were on your team, I should say. It sure has been disappointing watching Microsoft, like watching the Office group and the Office dev group. Well, really, there is no Office dev, it seems, that it's so much of the work that you guys did. You're just not seeing the momentum really continue since you guys left. And it's kind of like your team is gone, which is disappointing because you guys made a lot of headway in the really building developer story for Office 365. So I wish that Microsoft, the Office group, would kind of have a little bit more energy, get pushed into that.
Yeah, well, it's a whole side topic we can talk about at some point. But weirdly, in a nutshell, the team still exists. It's just they're doing different things. Whether or not you agree with what they're doing is a different point of different thing. But yeah, it's not as publicly visible, that's for sure.
All good. I did see another bit of Office news that came out this past week was that Outlook add-ins have now come to iOS. So if you have Outlook installed on your iPhone or your iPad, we now have add-ins for Outlook.
So I've heard, but I haven't seen them yet.
Oh, you haven't?
No, I haven't tried. Have you updated your app?
I have. It's a little disappointing because, frankly, the only one that's really there, or one of the ones that's there, is Giphy. And so it's like, that's not what I was looking for. I wanted Boomerang. I wanted LinkedIn. I wanted PayPal. I wanted those add-ins.
You use Trello, though, don't you?
I did. I don't use it as much.
Oh, I see. Okay.
But that Trello, I didn't see the Trello one inside the Outlook add-in just yet. So,
Maybe that's not quite ready. I thought that was on the list of things, but anyway.
I guess it's nice that this finally came around. My joke was that, I think when I saw this news, I was like, wow, did you notice that I just held my breath for the longest time, for the record ever, since the first time I remember Jeremy Thaik standing up on stage at Build with, who's that? Was it Rob Lefferts? And showing the roadmap, what, like almost 2-3 years ago now?
Yeah, add-ins for Outlook on iOS have been a work in progress for a long time. I don't actually know what happened. Right before I left, I thought they were very, very close to releasing. And in fact, Satya demoed it on stage at Dreamforce 2 years ago in an early form. And I don't know what happened, but it didn't happen.
Well, it's there now. I mean, it's a little disappointing, but it was a little disappointing it's taken as long as it has. But
Currently they got Evernote, Giphy, Nimble, Smartsheet, Translator, and Trello. And I imagine there'll be more coming as they get them. But yeah.
Crazy. Okay.
Certainly take it a while.
That's my Office update. You got any? You got a couple of other news items, don't you?
Not specifically Office, but kind of. There's another one. Forrester's 2016 Enterprise Collaboration Wave Report came out, and Microsoft is a leader is the name of the blog post on the Office blogs. So you know how Forrester do Wave Reports, Gartner does Magic Quadrants. Forrester's Enterprise Collab Wave Report came out, and it placed Microsoft in the top part of the wave, the top right part of the wave, which is kind of the leaders. I don't know what they call it. I guess ripple of the wave report. I don't know, which means that they have a strong strategy and strong current offering. And they're not in the very, very top right, but they're certainly in the most top right of all of the others. And up in the other leaders section is IBM, Jive, and Salesforce. And so, you know, you could take these reports for what they're worth, right? Some people really rely on them, others don't. But they're kind of interesting because it's interesting to see an analyst decide where to put these folks on the map. But what's kind of interesting about this report is Yammer kind of swoops in and decides that it's the reason, at least I'm reading between the lines, but it's sort of Yammer kind of swoops in and says that, you know, it's the reason why it got the top spot in collaboration, which I find very hard to believe. But Yammer is the social network for work and is included in Office 365. Over the last years, we've worked to integrate Yammer more deeply in Office 365, both to extend the Yammer Enterprise to other applications in Office 365 and bring blah, 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 blah. Anyway, yeah, it's kind of reading between the lines. It's like Yammer got them the top spot. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I don't know if that's necessarily the case. But I guess we'll have to read the whole... I haven't read the entire Wave report, and I'll need to read that to find out if Forrester really swallowed that pill. But I'm not sure yet. But anyway, that was kind of interesting. A lot of companies and a lot of company leadership that rely on research from Forrester and Gartner and Constellation Research and so forth. And so these things actually matter quite a lot commercially.
Yeah, the Yammer bit, it seems to me that Yammer always seems to like over-tout their position and their state from what the reality is. I guess the two things that kind of come up to me is they have their alternate reality that Yammer kind of lives in. And I know the values, the data may be out there, but it sure doesn't see that from what I see in the trenches. I mean, it's almost like they have their own alternate facts.
Yeah.
You know? So.
Tis but a scratch.
Yeah. So yep. I don't know. Whatever. Cool. The Forrester reports and the Forrester and Gartner, they have a lot of companies do rely on their research. So
yeah, maybe I'll go read the full report and see exactly how much crack they're smoking. But I'll leave that until after I've actually read the report.
Yeah, why don't you move on to Fast Track?
Yeah. I've got another one. So Fast Track expands support to Windows 10, Dynamics 365, and Microsoft Teams. So if you're not familiar with Fast Track, it's a deployment tool or process or offer, I guess, from Microsoft for Office 365 customers so far, or historically Office 365 customers, that basically if you become an Office 365 customer over a certain size, Microsoft give you access to a whole bunch of deployment resources. And so that could be, that's tools, but it's also people and a process for helping you onboard into Office 365. So they have a couple of deployment centers around the world, which are staffed with a whole bunch of people that help you get AD Connect set up and all of this sort of stuff, and then get your mailboxes migrated and all that sort of stuff into 365. But it looks like they're now expanding that to include Windows 10 deployment and also Dynamics 365 and Microsoft Teams, which I'll get to in a sec. So I don't exactly know what they do as part of that for Windows 10 and Dynamics 365, like exactly what help they provide you outside of, you know, sort of standard tools and resources and a few informational type things. But I suspect they help you with your deployment plan to get Windows 10 deployed in your organization, things like that. What they did have an interesting statistic that they're serving 4,000 new customers every month through Fast Track, which is pretty cool. That's pretty interesting.
That is interesting.
Yep. And that they've done over 22,000 customers migrated so far for a total of 3.7 petabytes of customer data migrated through Fast Track, which is pretty cool. Some interesting stats on Office 365 kind of buried in there. But Fast Track started real small and it's kind of been expanding. And I think one of the interesting things to see here is the Microsoft Teams support being added, which, you know, my previous comment about a whole bunch of weight being thrown behind Microsoft Teams, this is a big deal. Mm-hmm. Because this means that every new customer over a certain size that goes through Fast Track, one of the parts of the deployment will be deploying Microsoft Teams, getting it set up, making sure that the customer is using Microsoft Teams. And this means a lot to Microsoft getting usage once a customer is in the cloud is a really big deal to them. And so anything added to Fast Track is a big deal in that regard, because it means that customers will come out the other side of their deployment and be using these things. So it's a good sign for them.
Mm, very cool.
That's Fast Track updates.
That's a bunch of updates there. Cool. There's our Microsoft Azure and Office updates. And we got some other updates we want to share specifically around cloud companies. But before I do that, why don't we have a little step in from Pay Some Bills from one of the words from our sponsors.
The Microsoft Cloud Show is sponsored by Valid.nl. Valid's motto is stay ahead. Its mission is to enable its customers to excel in their business through the innovative use of IT. Valid is always on the lookout for new colleagues. Are you interested in all things happening in Azure, whether in infrastructure, SQL Server, Office 365, BI, SharePoint, or .NET? Look them up on Valid.nl.
All right, CJ, we got a couple quarterly reports that have been announced here, and we've got two really good ones, and we've got two kind of ones. So the first one that I got here is around Microsoft. Microsoft is kind of blowing the sock. Well, not kind of. Microsoft is blowing the socks off everyone as far as their cloud numbers go. So they reported their results for the second fiscal quarter, posting an earnings of 83 cents per share on $26.1 billion. That's definitely up from what people were expecting. They were expecting just 79 cents, so they beat it by 4 cents per share. And they also, again, they posted $26.1 billion in revenue. The street expected $25.3 billion. There's some bits in here that I found very, very interesting. It's a quote from TechCrunch. Microsoft continues to see robust growth in its productivity and business process segment, which is led by the adoption of Office 365 by consumers and enterprises. That unit grew revenues by 10% for the quarter to $7.4 billion. Their intelligent cloud, which is both Azure and Office 365, service revenue and enterprise services, their revenue increased 8% to $6.4 billion. And they also reported that their LinkedIn acquisition closed late in the second quarter, and that contributed to $228 million in revenue and reduced the earnings per share by 1 cent. So without that, the numbers would have been even better, but still one hell of a quarter. I think that the other big news out of there was that Microsoft's valuation is over $500 billion. For the first time ever, I think, or for the first time since Gates? I'm trying to remember which one that was.
I think it's for the first time over $500 billion.
Yeah.
Ever.
I think that's right.
Yeah. That's significant.
It's quite significant. What do you think about those numbers?
Great, actually. They had a blowout quarter. I thought it was a fantastic quarter for them. They're doing really well. I think they're really playing up the Azure number, which is still a pretty small thing, but I think Office 365 is crushing it for them, and they're doing a really, really bang-up job. I think they're actually using, that's why they kind of, they talk about percentages for Azure and not real revenue numbers, which is interesting because AWS are quoting real revenue numbers for AWS. I don't think Azure is quite as big as everybody thinks, but anyway, they're crushing it in the cloud. 90-something percent up is pretty awesome for Azure.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, what was it? The last number I saw was around 70 or 80 million commercial or enterprises are using 365, sorry, licenses, I should say. And I don't know how many businesses that is, because clearly you've got, I count as one because I'm only one employee, but if you have companies like large corporations like Microsoft is what, like 80,000 or 100,000 licenses and such. So I don't know how many companies that is. We know how many licenses that is. On the consumer market, you know, that's obviously a one by one kind of a license thing, and that's what ballpark around 25 or 30 million. To put that in perspective, in Google's quarterly call, which was a positive call, they did tout the fact that they achieved the G Suite, which is essentially their offering like Office 365, not feature for feature, but it's generally their same suite. It's achieved a significant new customer milestone last quarter, with more than 3 million paying businesses are now using G Suite. It's a little different from the numbers we just talked about with Office 365 being close to 100 million businesses and licenses compared to 3 million businesses in G Suite.
Yeah, this is interesting from Google because I suspect a lot of those 3 million businesses are single or two-person shops as well. So, you know, and they're quoting the number of businesses because their number of seats are so pathetic in comparison. I don't know. That's a guess, right? And I'm a Microsoftie through and through, so I'm a bit biased in this, but I suspect that's what's going on. And whereas Microsoft has definitely got the lead in large enterprises, lots of seats, and so they prefer to quote seat numbers. So yeah, it's an interesting play by Google trying to promote some momentum there, but G Suite is such a tiny little blip on Google's radar that it'll always be the least important part of their business, so to speak.
Yeah. I just found that interesting, you know, comparing what Google's Office 365, quote, competition, their numbers compared to Microsoft's. And now I can do the same thing, too, if we look over at Amazon's numbers. You alluded to just a second ago, too. Amazon reported their quarterly earnings. And while some of the numbers looked really good, they got pummeled by Wall Street after they reported. Their shares were off 4%. So their earnings per share were $1.54 compared to what Reuters expected of $1.35. That seems great, 19 cents up. However, Reuters did expect revenue of $44.6 billion when it was really $43.7. So they were off by about $1 billion from what Reuters was expecting. Amazon Web Services was off by about $100 million. They reported 3.5, where a group called FactSet was expecting 3.6 billion. So they got quite a bit beat up there, but you can see that the numbers, we talked a little bit about the real numbers with Office 365 and the numbers that they report and the numbers the way Google reports their numbers. It's not apples to apples. Same thing between Amazon and Azure as far as AWS goes, and they don't report apples to apples. Azure focuses more on percentages. Amazon Web Services does report actual dollar amounts, so a little bit different there.
Yeah, they're also trying to not give each other the inside info on how they're really doing. Mm-hmm. You know, they play a fine line between legally what they need to say and so forth, and also not giving away too much info to the other side. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting that they all report things a bit differently, because it makes it really hard to do comparisons.
Yeah, it really does. I will tell you one thing that is interesting too. If you go look at this article that we'll link to on CNBC, and you scroll about halfway down through the article, you'll see a chart there where it shows AWS's growing share of sale is a growing share of their Amazon sales, and they put total revenue next to AWS revenue, and it's kind of shocking that AWS is as small of a percentage of Amazon's total revenue. Now, granted, a lot of that, it's got a much higher profit margin than what Amazon's total sales are going to look like, because they're, selling physical goods and stuff, but still, it's pretty darn surprising how AWS factors in their entire business.
Yeah, it is quite different though, because the rest of it is retail, right? Mm-hmm. And it's low margin, super low margin, lots and lots of turnover, right? And it's all about volume, whereas AWS is much higher margin, and it's their own product. So, but yeah, it's still a small percentage. Mm-hmm. Well, not small. It's a lot of money, but it's still relatively small.
It is. So our last bit, we're going to pivot a little bit and go back to more of the consumer market. We're going to talk a little bit about another quarter. So we started off with really good quarterly number, which came from Microsoft. Then we kind of had interesting news from Google. Well, the consensus on the street was negative from Amazon. But Apple had, like Microsoft, a stellar report. So let me read out some of this stuff. This kicked up their stock after hours by 3% when they reported this. So their earnings per share was 15 cents higher than what Reuters expected. They came in at $3.36 a share. Revenue was up over $1 billion than what they was expected, at $78.4 billion. iPhone shipments were up a little under 1 million from what they expected. 78.29 million came out. Their services revenue was up by a couple hundred million. And they revised some of their guidance too going forward. They revised it up. But there was one number that just blew me away when they came out with it. Apple is the world's biggest company, and they have a massive cash stockpile. That's liquid assets that they can get access to, within 24 to 48 hours. This number is larger than Sri Lanka's estimated 2016 GDP. They have $27 billion in operating cash flow. That's Apple. They have a massive cash stockpile of $246 billion.
It's just nuts, isn't it?
So there were some things coming out where they talked about, a little bit of news about Apple working on a chip that was going to remove some of the things that they relied on the Intel chip for, so that they could focus on some of their own stuff. That's supposed to give them a little bit more buying opportunities or buying power against Intel. Some people just speculated, saying, hey, look, Apple may not even use their own chip. They may just be doing it to do a power play against Intel. And why are they doing it? Because they can afford it. They can afford it. They can use this money, just invest it to kind of scare Intel a little bit.
Yeah, it's just such a massive war chest. They can decide whatever they want to do, they could go do. And I don't know, if I was shareholders, I'd be wanting some of that cash back, to be honest.
I would think so. I agree with you on that one.
That's a lot of money. This will let them weather any storms for quite some time.
Oh my God. Everyone's sitting there doing the doom and gloom on their MacBooks and their all that stuff going. We'll see. So
Yeah.
Hey, I got a curveball to throw at you.
Oh yeah?
Remember Oracle?
Oh yeah.
All right. So get this. They've changed their licensing model for cloud, for people who are using their products in the cloud. And this is like a complete left hook.
I read this article. You pointed me at it. I took a look at it. I just can't believe this is real. Like, how is this possible?
Yeah. So get the, this is an article or a blog coming from a site called oraclebase.com, which they do have, they get a lot of good press for covering Oracle stuff. But let me read through this and how they do it. It's a change in how their licensing model works, and you'll see what the impact there is. So they have this licensing document. And what it does is it now explicitly mentions the differences between how virtual CPUs are licensed on different cloud products. So on AWS, a virtual CPU is one Intel hyperthread. So you need two virtual CPUs to make a real core. Azure doesn't use hyperthreading on their boxes, so one virtual CPU equals one real core. Mm. In the previous version of this document, it didn't make it very clear, so it read however you really wanted to. It basically read how you were paying for stuff on AWS. Now, the document now says, quote, when counting Oracle processor license requirements on authorized cloud environments, the Oracle processor core factor table is not applicable. So, I'm going to just read straight from the blog post here, so I'll let you know when I stop. So, quote, just digest that for a minute. The Intel core factor is a 0.5, so an 8-core physical box now requires 4 cores of licensing. Now on the cloud, an 8-core VM, which is 16 virtual CPUs on AWS or 8 virtual CPUs on Azure, requires 8 cores of licensing. On January the 23rd, the Intel core factor was removed from the cloud licensing calculation overnight, so your licensing cost for the cloud doubled. End quote.
WTF.
Yeah. WTF with a frowny emoticon. So
effectively, there used to be this thing called the factor table, which equated for, on Intel cores, you really only counted half the number of cores reported for licensing purposes, right? Because they were saying, you know, for every actual core, it's really showing as 2. So we will only make you pay for half of the cores showing, right? Mm. So instead of 2 cores showing, you just have to pay for 1 license, right? But now on an 8-core box, 8-core VM requires 8 cores of licensing as opposed to 4. So that's, I mean, as if Oracle licensing wasn't expensive enough, it just literally doubled in a cloud environment overnight.
Well, in a cloud environment, if you're on AWS, it looks like if it's Azure, it doesn't change, right?
Right, because the same number of cores reported, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah. But this is let's face it, a lot of people are using Oracle. There are a lot of them that are on AWS. So that's, yikes.
Zoinks.
Anyway, so yeah, this guy's like, the ugly part of this guy's article was the reaction to this is going to be really bad. It's getting really hard to remain an Oracle fanboy these days. Well, I would agree with that. I mean, I guess you kind of have to be a fanboy at first, not be it. So anyway, hey, man.
That's absolutely brutal, dude. I don't understand how they're doing this, but I bet there's a bunch of really awkward sales calls happening about this.
Bunch of sales guys just went, oh, yeah, I don't want to bleep that one out.
Yeah, major pucker factor.
Yeah.
No doubt, yeah.
All right, dude. Let's do picks.
Yeah, let's rock on.
Why don't you give us our first pick here?
Yep. So, first pick. NASA has just released the first look into their human research on Mark and Scott Kelly, who are identical twins, one of which who stayed on Earth and the other one who went into space for a year. And their preliminary results on how stressful a trip to Mars will be on the human body. And I haven't had a full read through of all this, but we watched this mission with great interest where it was the first time I think they've managed to get identical twins into space for a long duration, at least. I don't know about anybody else, but long duration space travel and the effects on the body.
Identical twins where one was left on Earth as a control factor.
Yeah. And they did a whole bunch of tests on each of them. So Mark remained on Earth. Is that right? Am I getting the twins around the right way? Scott spent a year in space. Yeah.
Yeah, Scott Kelly.
So Mark stayed on Earth. They did a bunch of tests on him as well. He was in retirement, I think, but came out of retirement for the twin study. They both baselined both of the twins. Scott went to space for a year, 12 months or so, and then they came back and did a whole bunch of follow-up research on both of them, and the results are starting to come out about some of those things. And it's interesting because I read an article yesterday about some of the things they're finding and how it's starting to change, like different proteins in the body and stuff like that. And this will be really important for when we want to go do space travel that's a lot longer and the effects it's going to have on us.
I found the interesting part of the article talks about the stuff that they did not expect. And that's, of course, why you do those experiments, because like you said, there were some things that changed in Scott's body. They don't know what the impact of the changes are. Or at least they haven't gone that far, but they talked about some of the changes that did happen while he was up there. So that, I think that's fascinating.
Yeah, hormone levels, proteins, bugs in your gut, all sorts of things.
It is interesting.
Pretty cool.
So I'm going to switch, go a little, not really. I'm going to stay geeky on this. A couple of weeks ago, we did the geek out on the cutting the cord, and I talked a little bit about my setup.
Yeah.
This past week, Plex which is the media server that I use and a lot of other people use as well, Plex announced a new skill that has been published for if you have an Amazon Echo or Amazon Alexa. So I can now say, Alexa, my Alexa just woke up by saying that. I could say, Alexa, tell Plex to find the latest movie or something like that. And it will go find that stuff and actually set it up. And you can tell it, you know, set up a default server if you have multiple Plex servers and stuff. Mm. So I'll put a link to that in the show notes. I play with it a little bit. I'm not much of a voice activated kind of person on trying to control things. I mean, Alexa, yeah, it's nice. But if I'm going to go through and like try and watch TV or find something like that, I'm going to go pull up the remote and do it. I will tell you the voice activated, like the dictation stuff on my Apple Watch is tremendously good. I get a text, hit like one little thing to respond to it, and I can actually say something, goes right in, say, yep, that's it, and sends it away. Shows me the transcription. Nice. It's really, really good.
That's cool. I do control some stuff from Alexa through SmartThings and the Harmony Hub. Mm. So like, you know, if our kids are in the lounge, they might watch a TV episode or something before dinner. They've watched very little TV, but you know, it's always impossible to, I like to call it extracting them from the matrix, mm-hmm. because you know, it's like pulling the plug real quick. But so now in the kitchen, I can say, Alexa, turn the TV off, and boom. And suddenly there's a whole lot of screaming from the other room. Yeah. It's awesome.
It's amazing with kids. Mine are the same way. You sit there, if you're everybody's in a room, everybody's talking just fine. And then someone pulls out a phone or pulls out an iPad and starts showing something. It's like, it's a kid magnet. They all just kind of get sucked right over to the screen.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
You got another pick?
No, that's it for me.
Oh, okay, well then I'll just give
I'm pickless.
Okay. We've known that. So the next one, the other one that I have, I'll stop at this one, is the update that came out this month for Visual Studio Code. It's Visual Studio Code 1.9. And this one, there's a ton of updates in this one. They did a really good job with it. But I tell you, there's one update that it prompted me. I literally went and said this on Twitter, but I wish that they would put the developer who actually was responsible for this, they put his name out there because I want to send this guy a fruitcake. So now if you do node-based development, or even if you don't, and you use things like Gulp, or you use things like Mocha to do your tests, or you use things like Yeoman, what they've done is they've set up like default launch configurations so that you can add in really quickly, launch a node debugging process for Gulp tasks. And so you can now set a breakpoint in your Gulp task and have it track. Same thing with Mocha testing. If you've ever tried to set that debugging up yourself and debug a Gulp task or debug a unit test you've written in Mocha, you have got some appreciation for how hard that, there's not a lot of stuff you have to do to get it right, but yeah. To get it right, it is so freaking, there's too many dials that you can kind of play with to get it that just perfect. And it's not easy.
Yeah. And you know, when you know one thing is wrong and you're not sure which, mm-hmm. and then you've got 1,000 combinations to try.
Yeah, exactly. And you tweak one thing here and nope, that didn't change it. What about this thing? Oh, so this is brutal. Awesome. They put this out there. I got a link. I have the link that I put in the show notes will take you straight to this debugging bit. But the latest update for Visual Studio Code, 2 thumbs up for me.
Nice. Nice. I'll have to try that out.
Well, hey, man, that was a whole lot of news that we just got through. Got a couple picks in there as well. And got another show we just wrapped up in the bag.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it's good to catch up on some news. We got a lot. We had a bit of a lull in the news over the break, so it's nice to catch up on some.
Yeah, they did. They went berserk. So yeah, we got a little lull in the news. So we picked up a few interviews, and while the interviews were happening, we saw a bunch of news coming in, and we're like, ah, crap. So
we got a lot of news.
Yeah. So
we'll try to keep it up from this point on.
But hey, everybody, we got a couple great shows lined up coming out in the next few weeks. So stay tuned, and we will see you then. Did you like this episode? Send us a tweet about it and drop us a 5-star review in iTunes. Word of mouth recommendations are the most effective ways for us to grow the show. We'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text. We'll record it as a wave or an MP3 and provide a link so that we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is an excerpt from Evaporated Air by Monk Turner, used under Creative Commons. You can subscribe to us on iTunes and the Google Play Store by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find show notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook, searching for Microsoft Cloud Show, or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. And finally, sign up to our mailing list by heading to our website and entering your email to interact with us, participate in upcoming interviews, and other cool stuff. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.